Hey everyone, it's Tech Grumps plus minus plus plus minus or something. Plus one to, what is it now? 36?
37.
Plus one like.
Yeah. It's 36 plus one, so 37. So this is the show which features people talking about things, generally technical, often not. And we've got a full roundup of strange people to be on the show tonight. Ian Forrester.
Hello. I'm not too sure about these strange people. I'm a normal person.
Yeah, except you're on this show, so.
Okay.
Nick Ferrier.
Yes.
Are you going to say hello?
Oh, sorry, yes. Hello.
We've got David Eastman.
Hello.
And joining us this week, we've got Jazz Dalawal.
Good evening, dear listener.
Ooh. And Oliver Keyes.
Hello.
Are you a Teletubby, anything? Oliver?
Heyo.
Heyo. Heyo.
We're going to start this week with a gigantic mea culpa from me. Last week, I said that Google Plus sounds like a bloody horrible idea.
Eat your words.
This week, I've tried it, and it's actually not bad. There are things I don't like about it still, but that's part of the reason why this show is called Tech Grumps, not Tech Happy About Everything. But no, Google Plus is actually quite cool. Eastman, you've tried it this week, and
yeah, I joined it in order to like hate it, but you know, properly can't really properly hate something unless you join it. But it was all right, really. Yeah, you know, you put your little people in your little circles. It was a bit slow today because I think that was the final letting everyone in, so it was a bit slow. But it was fairly simple to use. It's on the web, not on an application. Most people will probably in the end run it on an application, but the thing is, you can run it on the web. Yeah, it seemed pretty simple. The only thing immediately that I thought was a bit odd is if you put somebody in your stream, so to speak, you get a lot of their old conversations if new people add something on, which is a little bit odd. So you can get flooded with very old stuff. But other than that, yeah, it was. I like the fact that it doesn't have a load of shit adverts and nonsense like Facebook. Well, I don't want to compare it to Facebook because Facebook's just shit. But it's functional in the way that I think people wanted a closed set of communication, you know, not public, but a closed set like Facebook has. And it seems to achieve that without any extra bits. And I can imagine that the Hangout stuff, all those extra bits working fine without any need to go and see them. So I weren't immediately like, whereas Buzz I didn't even join because it sounded appalling. This I'm quite happy to sort of, I'm not going to use it a lot, but, you know, I'll use it a bit. Probably use it more than Facebook. So, yeah, I'm mainly thumbs up, I think. Sorry, world. I, too, was a bit negative.
Yeah, it does occasionally. The only problem I have with it is that it does have a lot of stuff which, you know, if you connect with your Scobles, or not necessarily Scobles, but people who are kind of quite popular or whatever, like Adderall, people like that, your stream gets filled with shit quite quickly. Because people will repost stuff and they'll add comments on and like it goes a bit crazy, but it does have a mute this post option, which is quite useful.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
It means that I don't have to look at this picture of Newt Gingrich anymore. goodbye, Newt Gingrich.
Why are you looking? No, I don't want to know.
No, Adderall posted it up because apparently Newt Gingrich had a hangout on Google Plus because he was trying to be down with the kids.
Down with the kids.
Newt Gingrich or Adderall? Which one of them was trying to be down with the kids?
No, I think Adderall is down with the kids, but Newt Gingrich. Yeah,
I'm not so sure, but fair enough. Yeah.
He's since he, you know, left his dying wife, in the hospital bed. He's had a lot to do. He hasn't, you know, begged for money off people. He figures this could be a good way of getting his leg over and getting money from people. Sorry that I'm being horribly political and mean about an otherwise respect.
I don't know whose link that was, but I'm just looking at that. I got 99 problems and a snitch ain't one. That's actually quite funny. Who's that?
That's jazz.
Yeah, that's quite funny.
My stream is just full of those pictures on my stream at the moment, so I thought I'd share.
They are mainly quite random, odd, and slightly pornographic in senses as well. But other than that, they're funny at least. Wait a minute. No, I'm stopping looking now. This looks like not suitable for home.
It was like Scoble, 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 and then semi-nude porn. Oh, hello.
Yeah. Today is the tomorrow you were worried about yesterday.
This is not semi-nude porn of Scoble.
No.
You can actually find that on the internet.
No!
That would be unsuitable in any sense.
I should probably post that on my stream.
No. Please don't.
Ian makes it.
Go on, plus one it quickly.
Make a circle filled with people you don't like and then broadcast it to them.
That's a great idea.
That's fantastic.
Somebody's put the intro from Dallas in their stream. But it did have this interesting comment at the bottom, which said that somebody wrote, in Romania, Dallas was the last Western show allowed during the nightmare 1980s because Cocoso was persuaded that it was sufficiently anti-capitalist. My pronunciation sucks. By the time he changed his mind, it was already too late. He'd paid for the full run in precious hard currency. Meanwhile, the show provided a luxuriant alternative to communism that was forcing people to wait more than a decade to buy the most rattle-trap Romanian car.
Wow.
Anyway. So, yeah. Google Plus. Okay. Next.
Is that plus one?
Plus one, yeah.
Just a quick one about Google Plus. Do you reckon if you renamed Google Circles?
Plus is okay, I think.
Well, it's an additive service there, isn't it?
But the circles are like the main, the whole, that's the crux of it, really.
No, I don't think so. There's the Hangout and the Huddle thing as well.
But they work off the back of circles.
Yeah, but sure. Once you've done the circles, once you've redone your social bits, you'll probably be more interested in the other bits. I mean, plus one in theory.
Okay.
What interests me is is whether they're going to have APIs and
absolutely
stuff like that, just like Facebook have.
They said they are coming shortly. Yeah. They just want to make sure the service is stable before they start rolling them out.
Sure, yes, I mean
they're not going to have applications, are they? I mean that's Facebook's domain. I don't think they're going to go in that direction. So when you say API, you just mean API on top of the services that
they'd be kind of mad not to have some kind of level of everybody does it now. GitHub has got plugins that you can do and stuff like that, so they'd be kind of mad not to have that kind of level of widgety type thing.
Count clickers on.
I
think that's coming though. I think they're still gonna obviously allow you to pull in a bit like Wave, where you're about to pull in your own widgets and stuff, and then there'll be definitely an API.
I have to say, actually, I mean, it's worth pointing out, this is a honeymoon period, because obviously the vast majority of people who are the sort of early-ish adopters, developers, blah blah blah, which Google don't want. Obviously they know they can get them any time. They want the Facebook audience, so it's quite right, they will do whatever they think will get that full audience on. If that is cow clickers, then they'll do that. I mean, they're not going to sit there with just a bunch of developers. So.
Yeah, one of the things that interests me is whether it's a better platform for your gran and all of that, and I'm not sure that it is yet. But somebody was pointing out today, I saw in a Google Plus thing, that they don't actually need it to succeed. They just need it to rattle Facebook's cage enough to force them to open up. Because Google have got vested interest in there being a whole bunch of data exposed to the public.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Because that's what they do, right? They do advertising and they do, you know, they do all that via search and HTTP, and they understand all of that, and that's what makes it all work. And so Facebook being a closed garden is anathema to them, as it is to most of the public web people. So I think that was a good argument, because I can't see how you can, a fight with Facebook would be, would just be World War One, wouldn't it? It would just be, you know, crazy waste of money. But a more tactical thing to try and force Facebook to come into the light a bit more, that might be doable.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you. Google's, I mean, obviously they do want it to succeed and do, you know, be the kind of the forerunner, but, you know, anything that kind of makes kind of Facebook wake up and go, oh, damn, you know, why don't we think of that? Why don't we, you know, why would we be a bit more open? Because, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but when I you know, as I said before last week, when I go into Facebook, I feel like I'm entering the walled garden, where with Google, Google Plus, it feels much more kind of draped over a load of stuff. And, you know, that's...
I can't say I feel that. I mean, Facebook is just a place where, you know, my wife and her friends are, and it's pretty tough to persuade them to go and do something else. It's like, why? Well, because it's open. What's that mean? What's the mean that it's open? So other people can see you. Well, they can see me here. All my friends can see me.
But this is the thing, right? This is, you know, the point of it is that it's that nature. It's the Chinese girl on the train syndrome, as I'm now calling it. You know, it's that kind of, you know, being able to kind of like reference
absolutely
stuff.
Absolutely, I know exactly what you mean. Absolutely, I'm totally with you there.
Did you really?
What is he on about?
I must have told this story a million times, right? You've all heard it, right? I know Jazz has.
I think maybe we fell asleep.
Can you refresh our memories again?
Right, okay, quickly, I was on a train back and forth to London, and...
Oh, that story!
You know it, then?
No.
Oh. our dear listener who's out there listening to this is probably thinking, what the fuck? So please share the story.
Okay, I'll go very quickly, right? So I was on a train, this very, very cute Japanese girl, a lady... sits opposite me, and I'm on one of those table seats, and
you
know, we first sit down, we kind of like play footsies a little bit, you know, and then we kind of settle down, and she puts her headphones on, I put my headphones
on. Hang on. You're playing footsies under the table. Do you know how much space is under those tables? There's not much space.
No, exactly. There's not much space. So, you know, we were kind of like trying to find space. You know, we're like,
what was she playing with?
My feet.
Are you sure? Not much space under those tables. Just saying.
Okay. I knew you'd say it. And then, all right, anyway, so put some headphones on. I put my headphones on, and I'm on Twitter. I'm saying, oh, I'm sitting next to this really cute lady on Twitter, and, yeah, what would you say if you were in my position? And obviously then it wasn't my friends that said, you know, you should say this. It was a total stranger. And my friends and other people were able to verify that what that person had said was actually made sense. And, you know, and also there was a peer pressure of, you know, because I was going, well, I don't really want to do it. You know, because they said, look, basically, write this on the back of a card, slide across the table, and let her read it, you know. And I was like, I don't really want to do this. And then everyone was like, go on, do it. And I went and did it, and unfortunately, she said her boyfriend's gonna pick her up from the station, and yeah, otherwise it's a very cute thing to do. It's very badly told, but you know.
See, I've only got one playing footsie on the train story. It doesn't involve me, sadly. I was on the train, and there was crowded commuter train back from London, and there was the other side of the train, there were two guys sitting opposite one another, and there was obviously some like piece of machinery under one of the seats, and one of the guy's feet was out quite far, and so far it was kind of almost intruding into the other guy's space and kind of touching his feet and stuff. And he loudly said, "Excuse me, sir, are you a homosexual or something?"
Wow.
But the whole point is that I think there's something about the public nature, which I think is really cool. And I think it's really nice, you know, like before, I mean, maybe I'm just a very public person, but...
talking about that, one of the main things which people seem to like about Google Plus is that it's not all like privacy invading and stuff like Facebook is.
Absolutely.
There's a real dichotomy here, isn't there? The thing is that you come onto Facebook, if you're a non-techie, I think the only reasons for disliking Facebook really nobody has ever explained to me one that isn't technical. Because you come onto Facebook, everybody's there. So, but then you have this problem of you can't, you know, that's kind of a problem as well, because you can't adjust the message that you want to give out to different people. It's pretty much, I mean, you can, but it's much more complicated than it is with Plus. So, you know, from the point of view of a non-techie, everybody's there. So why do I need to go to this other place that's the public thing?
I think it's very hard to get people out of Facebook. I mean, their lives are attached, their memories are attached, photos are attached.
No, that's their brains.
And I think it's just going to be difficult. But I think for techies, for the likes of us and early adopters, it's something new, something different. Ian, I'm still trying to understand about your whole thing about not seeing it as a bit of a walled garden, because... I'm still struggling with that. Explain a little further about what you mean by it not being a walled garden.
Well, okay, so for me, my experience of Google Plus is being on my phone. I've got the Google Plus Android app, and there's obviously the I'm using just the HTML site, and it just feels like, you know, most of the stuff I post is public, and most of the stuff that I see people are posting is public. You know, people are posting stuff into different circles, but I'm not really seeing much in the way of, like, you know, oh, well, this is going to be just a circle and that's it. And maybe it's just because I'm not in those circles, but...
Well, wait a minute, but this isn't... That's the whole point. It's not public. It's all restricted down to sets, isn't it? There is no public.
No, you can have public as well.
Oh, okay. But, I mean, that's not the reason people are using this.
No,
I understand you can have a big green thing saying public, but I just to point out, most people will probably post things to a set of circles. That is the point of this. So they can exclude people, so they can include people who they want to send the message to. They're not going to send it to all their contacts, are they? Or they're not all generic public, because there's no point. That's what Twitter does.
I think the deal with the walled garden is difficult. We were on a couple of weeks ago, and it's my fault this hasn't been published. But saying about Google search, clearly what's happening here, right, is that Google are going to take the stuff in your Plus,
yeah,
and they're going to add it to search, but only for your personalized search. So when I search something, I'll be able to see stuff. If I'm in your circle, I'll be able to see the stuff from the circles that you've included me in, right?
Mm.
But that's hardly... I mean, it might be very, very sophisticated, but it's just that, just, you know, if Facebook made a search engine, they'd do exactly the same thing.
See, this is brilliant. This is brilliant, because I want to create a circle with all of you guys in, and it's going to be known as my Goatsy circle. My Goatsy one. So when I start sending you pictures of Goatsy, how will Google take that and indic? Yeah.
If you look at my... No, wait. Very little.
Oh, man.
Yesterday, I had to delete five pictures of penises, right? Or nominate for deletion five pictures of penises, including one called mymicropenis.jpg. So I don't think it's going to affect me.
Sounds like Nick's day job. Jesus Christ.
That's a wider debate, anyway. But
yeah.
I just think it seems to me disingenuous to say that it's open, really.
No, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. I just feel like, you know, it's a bit like you know, I know. Well, for me at least, I don't know if it's set this way, but you remember Flickr? Yeah, when Flickr first started, before it even started, when you want to send someone a picture, you'd either have to attach it, or you'd have to send them a link to a site and they'd have to log in to see the picture. And then Flickr just did away with that. They went, no, you know what? Everything that you
I'd upload it to tommorris.org/files.
Yeah, all right. I know you say it. But for most people, you get a link and it'll be to a site that you have to log in to see the picture, And, Flickr just went, you know what? Everything that you post is going public. Yes, you can change it, but that's the default. And I think that's kind of what Google Plus has done. Also, circles again. It's kind of like the default option I can see is mainly public, Anyway.
Should we move on?
Yep, let's move on.
What's next?
Jazz was going to talk social, about social
things.
Yes, so after quite an exciting week in the press front, I would just like to say a shout out to the _Z_Factor, at ProfanitySwan, at The Great Gonzo, and finally at Erotic Puffin. And you may be wondering why I'm giving a shout out to these guys, but they kind
of... How much they pay you?
Nothing. They actually did a few interesting things this week, these guys. So the rise of the activist with regards to the whole revelations of the phone hacking of Mini Dollar's phone, which took place, which came out this week. So as those who may or may not know, a number of allegations were made against the News of the World this week.
Whoa. It's not our job to... Just repeat with you.
Yeah,
you will know this.
If you don't know, look at the front page of any of the newspapers other than the Sun
in the last year. Yeah. And then come back to the podcast. Yeah, or don't, because you clearly don't read the news.
Anyway, sorry. Go ahead, Jazz.
Hello.
Yep.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And as I said, the rise of the social activist, where a bunch of four or five people who decided to take really the whole thing in their own hands by trying to hurt News Corp and hurt News of the World, right through sort of advertisers and actually setting up on sort of sites and getting other people to tweet those advertisers and to take a bit of a whole kind of sway against what was happening with the News of the World, I thought was really interesting, and sort of seeing how it was sort of documented and how it sort of panned out, really. And right through the end, I just sort of, it's just really interesting to see this week about, the whole News of the World story certainly wasn't brought down by these four or five people, but it was great to sort of see that how the effect of social and how the effect of public opinion can work together to build upon something and still keep things going. I mean,
I totally agree. Yeah.
We'd like to see sort of more of this, and especially with the outrageous prices that we're paying for petrol at the moment and everything else, and also gas prices, where if we can get enough people to start to fight back at the man or the big core, then hopefully we'll see more of these ivory towers shot down. So
but it's like 2011, not the 60s, so that's not going to work. But no, I completely agree with your previous point. Partly because when they said, "Oh yeah, we're going to close down the News of the World," then the press said things like, "Oh, it's become a toxic brand." In other words, they used that very popular marketing term. But actually, that I think slightly understated the point, because the whole thing, it had been devalued, even though it's still profitable, and I reckon it would still be profitable if they kept on running it. But the effects of the social to sort of remove advertising, in other words, to sort of dig the, destroy the sandcastle from underneath, was incredibly strong and devalued it to such a degree that, yes, closing it was probably quite a sensible thing to do, because other than that, they'd be fighting police inquiries and, you know, reduced effectiveness and become a bit of a laughing stock. And, yeah, that was entirely sort of social network effect, no question about it. That didn't happen before.
The thing is, no newspaper can ever be the news.
That's right. Yeah,
you know, it's like Angus Deaton in a smaller way. When Angus
Deaton, smaller way with less cocaine,
shoved a whole load of cocaine up some girl's crack. It was, you know, he couldn't carry on because you are the comedy now. You know,
well, he couldn't carry on because he ran out of cocaine. Yeah,
sure. He had to stop. But what I was going to say, I was going to agree with that, but I was a bit upset, really, that it didn't come to banning Simply Red, really, because Mick Hucknall seems responsible for all of this. He's been right in there in News International, running the News of the World for many years, and clearly it was his fault. And I think that we should retaliate by never playing his records ever again.
Do I hear some irony in your voice?
No, I absolutely think that we should never play Mick Hucknall's records ever.
I think taken independently, yeah, that's got to be true. I don't think we'll ever play Simply Red again. Or forever, but that.
Did anyone see the story in the Telegraph today? News of the World final crossword has a message for catastrophe Rebecca Brooks. Departing staff at the News of the World appear to have sent a parting message of disgust to former editor Rebecca Brooks in the crossword of the paper's final edition. Despite orders allegedly given from the top of News International to ensure, quote, there were no libels or any hidden mocking messages of the chief executive, staff appear to have found a way of mocking Mrs. Brooks one last time. Included in the cryptic crossword clues were criminal enterprise, string of recordings, and will fear new security measure. The clue for 24 across, which reads, woman stares wildly at calamity, is thought to be a reference to a photograph of Mrs. Brooks staring furiously from the window of a car as she left News International's Wapping headquarters following the announcement the News of the World was to be shut down. Other answers include stench, racket, and tart.
Wow.
Was one of them holding back the years is shit?
Yeah, this isn't the Bible code, is it? Yeah.
A source at the News of the World told the Daily Mail that Mrs. Brooks had ordered two loyal Sun journalists to comb the papers looking for tricks. They said...
what sort of regime was it that she actually thought that would be necessary, and she was right?
Yeah.
Oh, they're journalists. Come on.
Who knew they were so smart? Hang on, but who knew they were so smart and so gifted?
Considering that there were audio recordings of Rebecca Brooks announcing that were leaked from the newsroom... within minutes of happening to a liberal blog.
I don't think it's surprising at all. I think that, you know, journalists and people who work in tech companies and probably people who work on dictionaries and things like that are probably, you know, the absolute worst. Library staff are the absolute worst for never believing in the organisation that they work for and just being... stab them in the back straight away. One of the things that I think is interesting...
Well, to be fair, they just lost all their jobs.
Yeah. Absolutely. But they were working for a scummy organisation. Yeah, and they must
they
have known
they were
that.
Working for scum. Yeah, exactly. The way they go, we're just normal, honest journalists. But you work for the News of the World. Did you not notice when you came in?
I hope they got their expenses filed. That's all I can say. They're going to be pissed otherwise.
What I was going to say is that it does feel, it feels quite good at the moment, because that whole, you know, like we were saying a few months ago about the, we all said on Twitter you should vote bloody for AV and nobody did. What that kind of liberal left-wing Twitter-arty kind of bollocks can do is shine a light on some of this. You know, that is part of the, you know, well done, Guardian. Well done, the Guardian. You know, I'm glad that I buy the paper every week and then don't read it because I don't like it. But I'm, you know, I'm glad I'm keeping them going in my little way. I just wish they'd put a donate button on there so I don't have to buy their paper. But, yeah, you know, well done. Well done, all those left wing. Well done, Tom Watson, who just carried on banging away, and everybody said,
Watson,
oh, shut up.
Definitely a hero. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. I can't stand the bloke. But well done. It's fantastic what he's done. And it feels quite good because it's not only this, but the Hari episode as well. You know, it does seem that a bit of collectivization has really worked wonders in the last month. But it seems quite negative as well. We can only do negative things. We can't do positive things.
Is that what Hari calls it? Collectivization? Where it just comes
Probably. I don't know. He's a stupid little wanker, isn't he? I fucking hate him. But, and always have had. So I'm really, really pleased I've kind of been proved right. I used to read The Independent and I had to stop because that twerp started writing in it. So I'm quite bitter about it.
On the subject of Twitter making impacts on the news of the world, Twitter is currently saying that the Department of Justice has confirmed that News International was targeting 9/11 victims. That's the US Department of Justice.
Wow.
So it's still going on, and it looks like it's crossed the Atlantic.
Wow.
Interesting. Well, could the US actually potentially bring charges?
Could they just bomb Australia?
So, if they were to carpet bomb Australia and turn it into 3,000 miles of broken, lifeless desert, nobody would fucking notice.
That is a problem, admittedly, yeah.
Ow.
But no, could they actually bring, like, extradite Rebecca Brooks?
And they'd have a fucking easier time of doing it than if he fled over there and we were trying to extradite him. The requirement to extradite someone from Britain to the US is
how high?
It's reasonable proof is a reasonable like doubt is the standard of proof. It's 50% basically.
If okay, so balance of probabilities. Yeah.
Yeah, if they could have done it, you can extradite them.
Because we definitely want to stop Rebecca Brooks being sent. We wouldn't.
We could sign a deal. We agree to let her be extradited on the condition that they don't give her back.
Exactly. Yeah.
But no, I was just thinking because if there's something like that in the US, although to be fair, they probably wouldn't because we've got stronger privacy laws.
No. Well, see, this is the thing. Their equivalent of REAPER, which is the statute that's being used in this, because it is phone hacking, is that it's the abbreviation's CALEA. It's actually got higher criminal penalties for corporate and like executive liability than REAPER does.
Interesting.
They've got a bit of history there, though, haven't they, about phone tapping and things like that. You'd expect it to be quite a serious offence.
Because I was thinking that actually, I was joking snarkily on IRC the other day that a racketeering offence would be quite fun. Just get the whole of the organisation and treat it as an organised crime syndicate. But that may just be overreach.
Wow.
Hmm.
Should we move on to the next subject?
Sure.
Yeah. Oliver?
Sure. Website blocking. Do you want the US website blocking or the UK website blocking? Because both countries' rights holders groups coincidentally introduced proposals in the same week.
That is a coincidence. Who'd have thought complete that would happen?
Well, whichever's most interesting or makes you grumpiest.
Let's do both.
Let's do both, yeah.
They're both fairly similar. Again, a massive coincidence. You'd think they were, you know, in the same field and in some way allied or something. I've got a slight bias towards the UK one because I was the one who leaked it. So that's probably what I kind of know about. But basically, in both countries, they've tabled a voluntary proposal for improving copyright enforcement. The American one's no biggie in some ways because it's just sort of an escalating series of warnings from the ISPs. British one, on the other hand, is using the Internet Watch Foundation and Clean Feed and the shitty clauses of the Digital Economy Act to stick in... Well, mainly it's, you know, 13 to 19, but...
Yeah, the stuff about Channel 4 and whatever, don't really give a shit about that.
Yeah, amendments to the Communications Act, fucked that, fuck that. Henry VII's clause is slightly worse. But anyway, so the proposal is to use all that to introduce through Clean Feed, the Internet Watch Foundation, so on and so forth, a completely voluntary scheme whereby rights holders would tell a special expert body that something is being infringed, and the special expert body would then tell the ISPs, and the ISPs would be obliged to block anyone from ever accessing the web content ever again.
Cool.
Hands up, so... anyone who can guess who funds the expert body.
I'm not sure which would make me angrier, the music industry or the taxpayer, but...
Neither. Although in practice it is the taxpayer, because the person who's going to be paying for the technical side of things is anyone with an internet connection when their fees go up.
Quite right, too.
The bigger problem with it, in my mind, isn't the fact that there's no judicial oversight, or the fact that it's incredibly biased towards the rights holders, or the fact that the technical implementation is inevitably going to be shit. It's that one of the clauses of the report was saying that the big focus has to be on, through a series of warnings and, you know, educational material produced by this new Copyrights Information Centre, educating people about copyright infringement and enforcement and, you know, what the problems are and so on and so forth. So it basically means that, yes, in the short term they're blocking websites, but in the long term they're also going to be filling people's heads with propaganda.
Cool.
Which is good fun.
So we just turn on Tor and go where we like anyway, just via somewhere else. Fine.
No, but not, no. This is the mistake that is... Yeah, we had this all the time when I was up backstage. Yeah, people go, "Oh yeah, well, don't worry, we'll just do this." No.
You have to get involved politically. You have to write your MP and all that stuff. You can't just say, "Oh fuck it, I'm going to use Tor."
Yeah, and also, how does the average person use Tor?
But I will use Tor.
All right. Well,
that's fine. If it comes to pass, yeah, sure. But before it happens, the whole techno fix is just a way of saying, fuck it, I can't be asked to actually engage politically.
I sort of have engaged politically
about 5 years ago, and I'm beginning to give up because...
We've got a surprising amount of traction. So Ed Vasey, who the proposal was addressed to, originally didn't let any of the digital rights and consumers groups into the meetings. One leak and 10,000 emails later, he's suddenly changed his mind, possibly because all his backbenchers sent him a little note saying, I just woke up to 400 angry emails in my inbox.
Oliver,
can you tell me what the fuck is going
on? This is totally wrong.
It's not going to make any difference, is it?
Probably not.
He'll let you into the meeting. Oh, great. I agree with David. I'm getting to the point now where I'm thinking, actually, the problem is these political processes are so loaded in, you know, despite their best interest is to serve the network, and you know, because that serves economies and everything. The free movement of information is good, you know, politically. All these people subscribe to these ideals, they just don't actually let them happen. Well, fuck them. I'm just gonna go and try and work to build a model that they can't subvert through law. And because I can do that. I can't do it on my own, but I can certainly do it with the help of a whole bunch of other people. And that's where I think we're getting to.
Yep. I mean, I remember sitting and, you know, watching a convention on Modern Liberty a couple of years back, and quite a lot of the politicians, some of whom we're talking about now, were sitting there telling us how, you know, how they're going to make sure X doesn't happen or Y doesn't happen. But even if they're honest, they don't really have a position to do that, as Nick says, because there's too many other interests going on. So, you know, sorry, but a lot of this has passed now. We're, you know, effectively just lost.
We haven't lost, because we can just go and build whatever we want.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, politically, using the political route, you know, that's...
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah,
but
it's pointless.
Yeah.
We need to go and build technical
solutions. It's not pointless.
No, but this is the problem, is that we should all engage democratically, even if it's not going to necessarily work out, because, you know, otherwise...
Don't. No, because they don't engage democratically. They're not interested.
No, they're not interested.
The objective of engagement does not necessarily have to be winning. The problem with the idea of, you know, we can't do anything about it, fuck it, we'll just go off and set up a load of Tornet nodes, is that it creates a segregation between the people who understand how things work and the people who don't.
No. I disagree. You see, I disagree with that because I'm not saying, fuck it, I'm going to look after myself.
Okay.
I'm saying, fuck it, we're going to go round them. I don't care what they say anymore. And I can't say that I'm quite there yet, but I am probably months away from the point where I go, I really don't care what the politics is around this issue anymore. I'm just going to go round them. But going round them doesn't mean I'll just do it for me. It means that we hackers, whatever, have got to build something that everybody can use to go round them. And when they break that, we'll go and build something else. And when they break that, we'll go and build something else. And we can keep going. I mean, they could kill us, but they're not going to do that.
You want to bet?
Probably.
I want to bet on that. Yeah.
My point was more that engaging democratically or engaging publicly isn't necessarily about winning. It can also be about getting people interested and educated as to what the issues are. One of the problems isn't only that, you know, the government's horribly biased in favour of the rights holders. It's that 9 out of 10 people who will be affected by these changes have no fucking clue what they are. If you want to have some sort of self-sustaining network of, more and more backup systems moving a step faster than they can move in law, then you need to do your best to convince people that that's something they should get involved with.
You need... If you go and explain to somebody how much ICANN sucks and how much, how much the fact that they'll soon be able, you know, that the US have now decided, or a judge has decided that actually that they can use the .com and .net hierarchy as their own personal fiefdom, which is only kind of putting into a legal judgment what they've already been doing through the Department for Homeland Security, as we've already discussed on the show. We can go and build an alternative to the DNS system, but we still need to engage people and explain why this is a problem in the first place and get people angry about it. Otherwise,
I don't disagree that it's I'm not saying it's a complete waste of time to try and engage politically, but what I'm saying is there's a lot of people, technical and legal, who are being involved in engaging with these people who are not interested, and a lot of those.
No, we're not engaging. We're not engaging with, you know, the rights holders.
No, you're engaging with the politicians. With the politicians, aren't interested. That system for dealing with these problems is just totally broken.
And why aren't you? You've got to deal with the rights holders. Unfortunately, you can't. You see, your idea. Well, let's go around the rights holders. That's even stupider, because they're the people pushing us forward. If you can't persuade them that there is another way to do this, and nobody has tried, or nobody's trying, or nobody's succeeded, then the problem will definitely not go away. So the idea of saying it's bad to go around it technically, but you can go through the public, but you can go around the rights holders, that's just silly too.
But look at this week at the News of the World thing. Look at how quickly political opinion can shift when shit happens. You've gone from basically, you look this week with Miliband and Cameron, right? Basically, Miliband went into Parliament thinking, I'm going to nail Cameron on this. And Cameron turned around and said, no, actually, we'll have a public inquiry. Because he knew that public opinion was so strong that unless he actually did something,
he was fucked.
He's going to be fucked.
But that, frankly, is because we all know why that is. That is because they hacked a dead girl's telephone. Yeah. Now, if they hadn't been so crassly stupid,
exactly. A few years back, they hacked into a load of celebrities' phones, and nobody gave a shit because they were celebrities.
No, members of the royal family and members of the cabinet.
Yeah, nobody gave a shit. It was the dead girl. But that was the problem. The dead girl and the war victims.
Yeah, I mean, they've already said hundreds of times politicians know about this, but obviously they fear News International, as they quite directly said. And I mean, John Major confronted. In fact, it was he did confront Rebecca Wade, and they responded, "We're going to pour a whole load of shit on your head," and they did. You know, and quite rightly, cabinet members and also people sitting in committees have kept quite a distance from News International because they do fear them.
I don't understand politicians because they can do stuff, but they don't want to. That's the point. They, you know, politics isn't about that. But anyway, my point
But they've also got too much to hide as well. Most of these politicians most of them are doing dodgy things here, there, and everywhere. How many realistically? Yeah. So how many politicians are realistically can hold their hands up and say, we are as clean as anything? Then none of them really are.
And they're certainly not going to, say, look into my life, I don't mind. I mean, very few people are going to do that anyway.
We talked on this show before about the nature of this, and I think this is true, that they're just different sorts of people from us. We're quite dogmatic. Probably everybody on the show is like 1,000 times more dogmatic than even a beginning politician. Because what politicians do right from the very beginning is do deals. They compromise, they adjust. You know, you have to. Whether you do that in a kind of blustery way or with aggression, you're still doing it. They're just totally different. And I try not to judge them and say, you're very compromised, because that's what they do.
That's true. The
position that they're in between compromising between doing what is right and doing what is really, really fucking wrong because the rights holders want it, that, you know, the middle path there is never going to work, but that's all they're ever going to do, the middle path. And they're always going, if the rights holders never move, and they don't, they're always going to drag us more and more and more towards their position, right? The politicians who will make the decisions. And because we can't summon a dead girl, right, we're never going to be able to make copyright sexy.
Yeah, but what's the alternative? So what are we going to do? We're going to shut down like the open rights group? Is that a completely pointless exercise, having
something like that?
Are we going to pirate
a
party?
Is, whatever? Look, what I'm saying is...
something for people to do, but it's not effective.
What I'm saying is I fear the increasing politicisation here. I'd love to see it work out, but I would love some of the energy that is going into that to actually be directed to doing something positive, not engaging in their process, but going around them and saying, look, we are presenting a real threat to you as well. Yes, the guys owning the copyright are a real threat to you because they've got money and they've got power that can be wielded, and so have we.
My thoughts on this all is that, you need to have both. I mean, you need people like, one of my stories I was going to bring up was, it's a 10-year anniversary of BitTorrent a little while ago. So you need that kind of like, well, you know what? We're going to just build something completely, totally disruptive and fuck you all, but you also need to have the people who do engage with the legal process. You need to kind of come from both ends.
Well, on the copyright thing, you need both the pirates to kind of give people, sorry, I've now just condoned something that's technically illegal. You need both the people who are building things like BitTorrent, but you also need people building the alternative in terms of things like Creative Commons, open source, whatever.
Yeah.
And you need people fighting, and making sure that at the very least, when something really, really bad, like the Digital Economy Act happens, or the, what's the new one which they're putting through that's basically the Digital Economy Act US version.
Senate bill or Protect IP. Yeah.
At the very least, you need people like that who are going to take the worst bits off. I mean, they're not going to defeat it. They can get rid of the really, really terrible bits. because, you know, yes, you're getting, you know, as Noam Chomsky says, yes, you should vote for the lesser of two evils because you get less evil. You know?
Yeah. And that's the reason why, you know, the ORG are good, but what they're not is very effective. But that doesn't, that's not a reason to close down the ORG.
I'm not arguing for closing down the ORG. I'm saying that I hope that some of the energy that is going into it, or I'd like to think that it could be better directed right now. And I also, I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that, although Chomsky's statement is obviously correct. Some of the time I look at some of this legislation and think, well, actually, I would like you to do your worst, because that might...
The faster you do your worst, the more the public will wake up and...
Yeah. Because I'm not talking about we hackers will go around you. I'm talking about we, you know, people, internet users, not just me.
Is a problem. It's a problem. On the one hand, if you say, you know, take the lesser of two evils, what you're saying is we are prepared to compromise. Inch by inch, we will lose ground. On the other hand, if you go to the worst possible situation, one where nobody can fail to be pissed off by it, the end result is a resolution to more neutral ground faster.
Exactly.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Probably. Exactly. It depends on what the evil is, basically.
There's a flip side to that, which is, I forget what they were called, but there was some kind of communist group who thought that, like, the NHS was a bad idea because it was keeping people comfortable, and if, you know, the NHS didn't exist, they'd rise up and, you know, fight for a revolution. That's fine, but if you don't have an NHS, people will fucking die and they won't fight for revolution. Like, seriously.
Yeah,
but the worst that's going to happen here is that you won't get to see My Name is Earl, you know.
and on that point, we should probably move on.
Yeah. What do we have next? Where are we? So I'm just trying to keep track of whether it's Google
UPnP.
Plus.
Ian, you're up.
Oh, okay, me. So I went to the local Dixon outlet store, which happens to be right on my doorstep. And I usually kind of stroll around now and then just to see what kind of bollocks they got. And I actually found quite a nice little Advent wireless digital photo frame. Just reading the instruction manual. For all of 20 quid. So I thought, oh, wow, okay, I'll take that. And... yeah, what my idea was to, with the wireless picture frame, I would be able to pull in all my fan art and my what kind of movies I got on my media center and show it on my picture frame. Now, luckily, the one I bought originally was even more backwards, a Toshiba one, but this one, at least it has the ability to connect to your local machines, but it uses Universal Plug and Play. And I've got Universal Plug and Play servers, and I've tried multiple Universal Plug and Play servers, but it just will not work. It will not pick it up. Or sometimes it sees it, and then it doesn't work, and it doesn't see the share, it doesn't see the movies, it doesn't see the pictures. It's insane. I mean, oh man, Universal Plug and Play really, really needs to die. And I'm not trying to say that we should replace it with some Apple bollocks, you know, but I'd say that there's something fundamentally broken about Universal Plug and Play. And I know that, what's the other one? DNNA is pretty much just as bad. Yeah, but this stuff should be really simple by now. You know, really, really simple. Like, for example, Tom sent me a URL in my direct Twitter, and
I'm just trying to work out what the fuck that was.
That thing I replied back to you, it was the Inception thing. And, you know, I basically, on my phone, I got a thing called, what's it called again? web flinger, and basically it said, "Look, yeah, now do you want to open this with you know, do you want to open this in YouTube? Do you want to open it in your browser, or do you want to fling it to your XBMC?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, I'll fling it to XBMC." And you know what? It worked. It worked no problem. It was just, I think it was just a very simple API, and you know, some things like that are just really good. I just don't understand why, you know, all this other stuff is just so backwards. So I'm going to have to hack around with this picture frame. I might actually take it back because it's driving me nuts. You know, I could mean to write a blog post about it, but it's just driving me so nuts. I just, yeah, I can look at it. It's on the floor right now. And it's got some pictures on this, some of these girls and this woman smelling photos. I was wearing flowers. I'm like, that's not my photos. What the hell is that doing on there? You know, anyway. Ran over.
just as a response, I was just going to say that Apple bollocks is called DNS Service Discovery. It's open source and it actually works kind of nicely. But, sorry, anyway.
UPnP isn't just that. UPnP is a file transfer protocol as well, right?
Yeah,
and it is really, really the promise is great, but it is really, really poor. I don't really understand how they've made it so abominably bad. But if you get any kind of glitch in the network, the whole stream seems to just disappear. Although I haven't seen a Microsoft client, I haven't seen an Android or anything like that client that actually works.
There are loads, but they just seem to, like, everything seems to not quite work enough. And that's a problem.
Yeah. It's connected. We started playing music, and now we've stopped. It's bizarre how bad it is. I don't really get it. It's a Microsoft thing, right? Microsoft invented it.
I'm not sure actually if Microsoft did invent it. If only there was some kind of encyclopedia that would tell us this.
Micropedia.
Great idea. We should go and build that.
Yeah, let's do it now.
Yeah. Nah, break too many rights.
Basically, my crux of it is that I know I got it picked up for £30, and you know what I'm probably going to end up doing? I'm going to end up having to, I can't even do that, actually. I was thinking about uploading covers of my DVD collection to Flickr and to just pull it back down again on this photo frame, but to try and not pollute my picture frame, but my Flickr account, I was going to make it more private, but then obviously it only picks up public photos. So I might have to start to photo bucket or something like that just to do this one thing. Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, it's annoying. And I'm sure there's probably a better way of doing it, but right now I can't find it. And I'm hacking around and it just isn't happening.
It's annoying because, again, it's one of those devices and you can't do anything with it except their interface, and their interface is rubbish.
Yeah. You got the general picture. But then I got it for £30, which is a bargain.
But it doesn't do anything, isn't.
That's true.
This is where you need your hardware hacking skills. And,
we had a podcast on that a few weeks ago and it was really interesting, but unfortunately, I haven't published it yet.
Let's not even go there. So anyway, that was it, really. I mean, I will hack around with it, and I will hopefully put up, how I actually do get it solved at some point. Because me and Jazz were talking about, because I've got a small DVD collection which just sits on the shelves. I'm actually going to move it into the spare room. And I got quite a big book collection, but I don't actually read any of the books. I got them all on Kindle. And the DVDs, once again, are all on a server somewhere. You can't really get a sense of who I am from looking at my DVD collection. Well, you can, but you know, see, because I bought Inception on Blu-ray. I haven't got a bloody Blu-ray drive, for fuck's sake, you know?
So how many copies of Inception do you have?
Well, one.
No, you haven't. You've got four.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like a more likely answer to
me. You've got a regular copy, you've got a Blu-ray, you've got the digital copy, and then you've got that version on the Xbox Media Center.
Oh, the ISO, yeah.
So we can tell something about you by your DVDs that you like Inception.
Yeah, okay, but it's like this. For example,
I think we already knew that, though, didn't we?
Yeah,
well, we did. Yeah.
For example, okay, I really like one of my films that I liked last year was Scott Pilgrim, and I quite like it, but I don't like it enough to own it on Blu-ray.
So are you going to see it in Somerset House? And it's London, but Somerset House is showing it in the open air cinema.
Oh, are they?
They are. Oh,
when is that?
A nice choice. End of July, beginning of August, I think.
That won't really work. It's a cold film.
It is a cold film. Yes, yes, that's a very good point. I don't know why they feel that it'll work, but I think it's the right sort of thing for the audience, even though it is a cold film.
Well, they should have Donnie Darko in the middle of a park. Which park it was now? It was High Park, and is it High Park or whatever park. And that would down really well.
Yeah, that would work. I was just thinking, actually, you were talking about your DVD collection. One of the things that is enjoyable about the kind of mating process is when you go to somebody else's house or flat and you get to browse around their stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
And you can't do that, can you?
No, exactly.
I don't do that anymore. I just sit in the country going tap 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 tap. Oh, outrage! So I don't have the pleasure of going to people's houses and saying, "Oh, you've read Ulysses? It's a load of shit, isn't it?" And that sort of thing.
Well, usually it's you've got Ulysses on your shelf because you haven't read it because it's a load of shit.
Well, sometimes you could, if you take it out, you can see how far they got through.
Yeah,
you know, normally.
And like, but where's the punctuation gone?
Ian and I were having the very same chat only a few weeks ago, weren't we?
Yeah.
Ian?
Yeah, exactly.
The digital representation of your physical representation of your digital self, which is a great place to pull.
Mm. So wait! What were you talking about, pulling part?
Well, yeah, I was thinking that we talked about a lot that night, but we didn't get that far. But if that young lady from the train had come over, and seen all those books and those films, she would have looked and thought, why has he got a Blu-ray and? Yeah, why has he got a Blu-ray copy of Inception but no Blu-ray player?
it's a vital part of validation of friendship.
No, it is. Right,
as far
right.
as I'm concerned, right? You go to somebody's house and they have, I don't know, Jason Statham films.
Ooh.
That would be it for me.
Wouldn't it be a strong recommendation?
I'd take the coffee and go.
Actually, I wouldn't take the coffee because it'd be instant, wouldn't it? It'd be rubbish. Oh, I wouldn't even take the coffee.
Oh, I mean, I know what you mean there. I mean, I went to a friend's house recently, and he's got quite a big book collection as well. And I was looking through, going, "Oh yeah, you know what? I've got that book. Have you read the new logo? Have you read this and that?" We're just chatting about it. It's a nice.
You get your Kindle out and say, "Yeah, I've got all these books right here."
I was wondering what you're going to say when you get your Kindle out. Oh, Kindle, yeah.
Okay. But yeah, no, there's nothing more pleasurable, is there, when you go to somebody you don't know very well, who.
I know sex is slightly more.
Yeah, you don't normally have sex with people you don't know very well.
Talking about books lasts a lot longer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You can talk about books after you finish the sex.
Exactly. Like, yeah. You kind of roll over and go, "Oh, great book you're reading there," you know?
Yeah, yeah.
What, Jamie Oliver's Guide to Fish?
Yeah, well, that'd be another one.
Still respect in the morning.
Oh my god.
But yeah, we need to come up with a way of doing that, don't we? Are we just going to have big screens showing your content?
Well,
what is your content?
Well, you know what?
You just go there and it says, "I'm 76% long form." And
the point was is that what me and Jazz were talking about is that I actually do have X-Men C does actually have a mode where you it's a screensaver, but it shows the fan art, which is nice, but then you have to leave your TV on all the time.
And yeah, Apple TV does the same, doesn't it?
So yeah.
That's obviously not very good, but perhaps a electronic paper or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Why is there no... once again, this is my other little tiny rant. I've never, ever seen a large-scale e-ink display. Why? Well,
because there isn't a fucking need for one, yeah.
There is. There is definitely a need. I've had people write to me and say...
The trouble is the need is only with the three of us.
The need is, like, insane blog posts, which, you know, no, it's like insane blog comments that I make on your site.
What?
I'd love a big e-ink poster. That would be awesome.
I just want to say that was Oliver, who's just leaving.
Okay.
Yeah, cheers, Oliver. Usually sign those things out. But
cheers, Oliver. I would really like to see that, but because that would be great. Then you could, once again, you could have almost like a nice big display, and it's just kind of like slowly showing some of the things that you've got, you know?
Yeah. Well, also, you know, I can see lots of... Sorry, this is turning to Gizmodo again, isn't it? But I can see lots of applications for a big e-ink display with, you know... What, I really like text.
Yeah.
As a, you know, as decoration.
Yeah, it's typography, yeah.
You know, display the Declaration of Independence or the first few... the first 200 words of The Rights of Man or, you know, those kind of things. That'd be so cool, just having that on your wall and just, you know,
this is refreshing. proper geek porn. I'm feeling strangely turned on by all this right now.
Actually, it's not so geeky now, because obviously this is what the Kindle does on its default screen. It comes out with lots of fun.
Yeah, that's parts. Awesome.
Yeah,
and the diagrams kind of
want that on a bigger scale. Want that on a bigger scale.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
well, so I mean, I think people would see what you mean. You know, just like the Kindle but bigger. So.
Exactly. Yes. Anyway, should we move on?
But I think you could sell it.
Oh, we're not.
The only problem I have with the Kindle is that it doesn't have the truly great authors like Kernaghan and Ritchie.
I'm just wondering why you're talking to
Simon Liu. Yeah, it does when you send a PDF.
Yeah.
That's not the loo, that's the kitchen. Sorry, I was going downstairs.
Why's your kitchen echoey?
It doesn't have curtains.
Oh.
As I've said before,
it's a kitchen.
All true British podcasts should sound like they're coming from the toilet. So you're just...
Can I do the Sid James bit?
What?
He said toilet!
Oh, man. Should we move on?
Melons!
Yeah, Jazz was going to talk about something.
PayPal getting hacked. The Twitter account getting hacked.
Oh, yeah.
From melons to PayPal UK getting hacked. Nice segue.
He said melons.
So the reason why I wanted to bring this up was a couple of reasons. Because one, I know the head of social for PayPal UK. It's a nice guy by the name of John. And it was really weird the other night when I was sat in front of my screen and looking at my Twitter feed, seeing PayPal UK sending out rather unmentionable things on their Twitter feed, pretty much saying the likes of PayPal sucks and generally doing Twitter searches for anyone who are saying bad things about them and spitting them out. And when you sort of see an account that you know who runs that account and they're running bad things, you kind of think, is John pissed? Is he leaving his employer soon? Is he hacked? What is going on?
Yeah.
And then you start seeing other people who are also in your feed who are also asking the same thing and also retweeting some of that stuff. You begin to panic. So you think, right, I'll send him a DM message. I'll try to phone him. I'll email him. I'll do whatever I can to tell him, right? And so the story was that, you know, send him all this sort of stuff, and he didn't reply. And it was like, phone him again and again and say, dude, your account is hacked and it's getting bad. And so it turns out that he sends me a message back and he says, I've logged a call with Twitter. I have logged it on their call. And there's nothing we can do. So 2 hours go by, and this poor guy is sat there waiting for Twitter to get back to him while those evil bastard hackers have changed the logo of PayPal. And I'm not a great – let me just get it. I'm not a great supporter of PayPal, right? Their fees suck, so I'm not a great supporter. But my point is, if it was any of your accounts and they were getting hacked and someone changed your profile picture to a giant turd with flies around it, I would be concerned, right? So if your account did get hacked and you want Twitter to help you, you've got to go through their crappy little system to log it. And then up to 2 to 3 hours, or if not more, before somebody comes back to you, and then you have to prove who you are and all that sort of stuff. And I just think this is unless you're some verified account supporter. But exactly. I just think this is insane.
Yeah, but I've just answered the question. If that's your concern, then verify your damn account.
But they choose how to verify, don't they? You can apply, but they still have to get
verified
it done.
Verified is only done if you. It's only done for. Last time I heard, it was only done if you have people who are impersonating you setting up, accounts with similar names and stuff, so that you can basically say, yeah, no, this is actually the real, whoever.
No, it's part of the business model, isn't it?
No,
it's part of the business model. You can pay for it.
Yeah.
Can you?
Yeah.
It's just a business. How much?
Because it used to be, as I described it, but...
When they just stuck it up and they weren't too sure, well, no doubt, where it fitted in, that was the reason people were using it. But no, it's just part of the business model now. But most people don't bother.
Because I would be interested in verifying my account if it's... How much is it?
I don't know. I'm not sure there is a fixed amount.
Oh, they just make it up as they go on.
You are.
They're like, Ian, you can have it for free. Not.
No chance.
They might not even offer it to you. But
I think, Ian, you're a toxic brand, so I'm not sure that they would offer it to you.
What? I'm not toxic. I'm a lovely.
You're a lovely brand.
No, you're
brand.
Toxic.
I'm a lovely.
You probably just looked to crazy downs.
Yeah. All right.
I understand what you're saying. I can't get that excited about this because Twitter are just shit. I mean, Twitter in we are shit shocker.
But don't you think it's really bad in the sense that they've grown immensely well, right? So everyone and their world and their dog and their cat and their fish are on there.
Look, I mean the whole of Twitter is.
That?
The whole
you expect
of Twitter
someone to sit
a...
by the phone? I mean, I don't know. What are you expecting?
It does cost a lot of money doing that sort of stuff. But also, Twitter have... we all know that in the last year, Twitter has decided to become evil.
Doing
all
true.
Sorts of things that none of us like. Why are we still there? I walked out a few weeks ago in a great big huff, but nobody came with me, so I had to come back.
Did you?
So you didn't even notice.
Yeah, what? Sorry.
I mean, in terms of Twitter and Facebook, I think Twitter's worse right now. But so hopefully, I can ditch Twitter and go to Google+. Maybe is something that's in the back of my mind. But
what is stopping you, by the way? That's a point. What is stopping you ditching Twitter and just going
it's
plus
the same,
all the way?
It's the same thing with Facebook.
People.
I've now got a whole bunch of people on Twitter that I only know on Twitter, but that I'm friendly enough that I'd miss them.
Oh.
I thought about the Facebook thing I'm not too bothered about. I mean, I can probably remove myself from Facebook, quite quickly, but Twitter... I don't know, because I think that's a similar situation as Nick. There's a lot of people that I just know through Twitter. And it is useful for certain things. And the thing the reason why I'm not so worried about it is that because it's only kind of 140 characters as such, I am still annoyed that they don't have, I wanted to get all my, what's it called? All the tweets that, were about the time when I was in hospital. I want to get them back just to look through them. And it's like impossible to get. I actually had to go to Facebook, do a dump, to get them, and I don't even want to get the dumb. I don't get all the stuff that people were talking about me, only the ones where people were mentioning my name.
You see, yeah, if you had a verified account, they would give you that as part of the service here.
Ooh, all right, I'm interested since, now.
Since Google started like logging, I suspect they actually log more of Twitter than Twitter.
But isn't that contract now over? That's what I heard.
Yeah, it is. I've heard similar that they've stopped. They've stopped.
Doing yeah,
because well, Google Real Time stopped working, and that was based on that feed, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that's
right.
It stopped working. Yeah.
So
there you go.
What is, so, I tell you something. Sorry. I was going to chip in about this, and I totally forgot why we were talking about Google, and now we're back on the subject. One of the interesting things here about what an operator Google is. So they came to shuffle people. I'm not sure I'm allowed to say this, but I'm going to do it anyway. And we're at that point in the podcast where nobody's listening.
I'm not listening. I'm on it.
Exactly.
I'm listening to it.
So they came to Wimmy about Shuffle People and said, "You're advertising on Shuffle People through Google. We're not going to let you do that anymore." And it was completely out of the blue. We had loads of revenue from this. So this is a chat roulette-like site, and they suddenly just closed us down. Totally massive hit against us.
And
we said, why? And they said, adult content. And then we said, but we've really cleaned it up. There's hardly any adult content on there anymore. We pushed and pushed and pushed. And in the end, they said, we're doing this to all chat sites. We're doing this to all video chat sites. Ooh. But you did it to us first, we said. And they said, yes, but we are doing it to all the others. And we said, well, we haven't seen any evidence of that. And they said, well, just wait, because you will. And we did. Within a couple of weeks, they closed down all the Google advertising on VChatter and a whole ton of them. And then, lo and behold, a couple of months later, Google come out with a video chat site.
Yeah, but you knew that was coming, obviously, as soon as they started.
Yeah, I got to say, Huddle? Whatever it's called. When I saw that, I was like, this is exactly like Nick's
Monster Chat. I don't know whether Nick had to focus on the person that's talking, but
no, but it's just
it's the same.
Yeah,
it is very similar. But obviously, we're still trying to be in the game because we're zero install, and people have to install Google Voice at least. I'm told it's a very slick process. It certainly isn't on Linux, but
no.
I'm sure that doesn't matter, but I'm told it's a pretty slick process, but at least it's still a process. They have a limited number of things as well. So anyway, yeah, we're still trying to be in the game. I think there's still a place for Flash video and later on HTML5 video. It's kind of interesting. They're such a big company. You wouldn't expect them to be able to work like that. That's pretty nimble. Quite evil, but it's impressive.
You can respect the evil sometimes.
A company like BT, having worked in BT, BT would be lucky if it could do something to its advantage from one department to another.
They haven't got the ability to be evil, even if they wanted to.
Yeah, that's right. They're too busy fighting each other at departmental level to actually do something for each other. So
hold on a minute. You don't have a form to be evil. Please fill out form 23B. Thank you very much.
Exactly. So for the advertising guys to shut something down because the product guys were coming out with a video chat. I mean, obviously, no. That's just I'm just throwing allegations at them. But I'm pretty sure that that's probably what happened. And that's pretty impressive, I think.
Okay. Is that it, or is there more?
Tom had one, I think.
I've got the Will and Kate story.
Oh, yeah, I was trying to avoid that.
This is pretty funny, actually. So I saw this on circulating around the blogs the other day. And it's really showing Britain to be rather subpar on the whole tech scene. internationally.
Wait a minute.
No, listen, it's funny, right? Okay. So basically, there was this event called the, what the fuck was it called? Variety New Media and something or other event. I had the picture here a second ago, but it's gone. Come back. Fuck. Anyway. It was a big event in LA organized by Variety magazine and it had a whole thing about the technology business and new media. And they had a session about, they had a panel session about the technology business in London and Tech City and the whole kind of Silicon Roundabout, all that kind of stuff. And Will and Kate, Wills and Kate, as the idiots like to say, the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, flew in specially for the event from Canada down to LA. And this was a, you know, thing with venture capitalists and big company executives and so on. And it was a bit strange. According to one article, they arrived to a panel on Tech City, i.e. London, about 45 minutes after it had started. Right. They took a seat on the stage among the panelists in front of an audience of hundreds. That's where the action stopped, however, this blog post writes. For the next 20 minutes, neither spoke nor was asked any questions by the moderator. The result was something of an awkward tableau of the couple sitting and smiling while panelists talked about the British technology scene. So I'm just trying to work out what kind of, you know, if you're trying to convince people to come and invest in Britain and invest in, you know, technology stuff in London, that what we do is UK trade and industry, rather than sending successful business people over or technologists or entrepreneurs or whatever, they send two people from the royal family to go and sit there and look pretty.
That
represents Britain's industry. How exactly?
This is just more of what we were saying. Right, they just are so far from getting it. That there's no point engaging with them. I don't mean the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. They're, you know,
they go where they're sent. Yeah,
they're just doing what they're told, aren't they?
No idea where they are from time to time.
How embarrassing for them, because they clearly didn't know. He made some awful joke about augmented reality, apparently. But who wouldn't in those circumstances? You know, if I was asked to go on a panel and talk about heraldry, I'd probably make a faux pas. And I'm sure he wouldn't. Embarrassing for them. And just what were you fucking thinking, sending them there? What was the point in that? I mean, it was Variety, so maybe it wasn't such a big deal because there was just a lot of people who didn't really matter there. But nonetheless, why on earth would you embarrass them by sending them there and embarrass yourselves by showing that you had no fucking clue by sending them there? It is awful.
Large quantities of media wank, but it's called the Variety Venture Capital and New Media Summit.
Wicked.
Sounds entertaining, doesn't it?
It kind of makes me want to stick horrible things into my genitalia to ease the pain.
Oh god!
I watched the video and I got about 2 minutes in and thought, why? Stop! Make it go away! And
pretty awful. But. You know, to me, it just says, as you say, it's the trade and industry policy is a joke. But it is, isn't it? They think we're a joke. obviously, because they're not prepared to do anything to support our industry, despite the fact it's got way more chance of employing a ton of people than films ever have. You know, the content industry.
Music, whatever. And you've got a shit ton of creative people who might actually be able to do something cool, but
there's a T-shirt I got, which I got from America, and it always reminds me of this, right? It says, "Stop laughing, computers are now cool," and I think it's almost that. It's they don't get it. They just do not understand. They're still kind of like, you know, laughing, and they don't understand that literally this stuff is just, we're just so far beyond them. It's ridiculous.
I don't think they're laughing anymore. I just think that, but they're so far from getting it that. Whenever you talk to one, you find yourself coming away. I don't know about you, but you know, I'm occasionally in the position where I have to talk to somebody, either in power or. No, I don't mean the royal family. I don't spend a lot of time with them, you know. But people in power, civil servants, senior civil servants, or ministers, that type of crowd, even very engaged political people who are not from our world. And you come away thinking, I think I just about managed to maybe get my point across by explaining it with an allegory about crocodiles. You know, come away so dissatisfied at being, you know, you're glad if you've even managed to get them to understand, you know, a tiny amount of what you were trying to get across. There's just no point.
I've had a few things like that. Like, one is, there's a guy who I occasionally talk to who's he's a kind of management type who does training, you know, your sort of management training program, you know, agile consultancy type person, right? Mm. Who I'm sure plenty of people probably would like to stick nails into. But I keep trying to explain the whole sort of Barcamp Hack Day kind of thing, where you don't pre-plan it. Like, you don't have to sit down and write a list of things you expect people to come along and do, and that actually the great thing about it is that people turn up and they do whatever the hell they want to work on or whatever the hell they want to talk about. They just get on and fucking do it, and you trust them to do so, and cool stuff you couldn't predict up front comes out of it. And that's the whole reason you have them, rather than just, you know, hire a consultant to tell you what you already know or whatever. And that every time I explain this to them, about 3 weeks later, they'll come back and say, well, if we were to do this thing, it would be really cool if they could do X.
What?
And I'm like, the point is that they're the programmers, they're the hackers, they'll come along, they've probably got a list of things which they really want to do. They'll build something which you couldn't even imagine, then it will be cool. You get the same thing as that. The other stupid one I had a while back was I went to a thing where I was kind of asked to go along to talk about semantic web stuff to Tom Watson, actually. Uh-huh. And Tom Watson kind of got it.
Yeah.
And basically I sort of showed a kind of tech demo of, you know, of how improving government data could lead to kind of quite cool things. And very simple wins that they could go for. But every time you hear government people talking about it, it's all, well, how are we going to commercialize this data? You know, how are you going to build a company out of government data? Well, no, that's not the primary reason you should be releasing data onto the internet.
Why it's because are they thinking about that?
We, these people, the citizens, the taxpayers, we pay you money to do things, and you should probably be releasing those things so that we can keep an eye on what you're doing, because it's kind of the single democracy. Yeah. Yeah, and
it's so embedded, though. It's so the idea of that crappy profit and loss is so embedded in the civil service now. They just it's going to take people a real imagination to get past that.
Mm.
When I was working in it 20 years ago, it was, you know, it was totally okay to be charging people for the information that they, you know, they paid for already through their taxes. Mm. It was just, you know, that was part of Thatcher's total change of the civil service, and it went along with it. It was the reason it went along with it is because they could build all this crap, useless, pointless profit and loss, and say, "Oh, but we're just like the private sector. You know, we have profit and loss. We have to earn money." No, you don't. You don't have to earn money. You just make something and then charge people for it. That isn't the same. You're not earning it. You're just saying you can't get this unless you pay me money for it. That's not. You know,
you're still going to have to do the data collection. Yeah,
they don't have to sell it. Yeah, they're not selling anything to anybody. They're just charging. Yeah,
but now that they're releasing it for free, they still feel the need to have those kind of commercial style use cases so that they can go back to these. I don't know who these stakeholders supposedly are, and say, "Oh yeah, well we've helped this, you know, small company, and they're selling iPhone apps, and what? We're talking about the location of public toilets, not, you know."
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that I mean by this statement about getting people to go round them is that we've got to do this from the ground up. So the stuff that Emma Mulqueeney and Rewired State is doing and all of that, that's fantastic. That has to be. We need about 1,000 times more of that kind of stuff so that, you know, all of these developers know somebody. So if you've got like 1,000 times more than we have of that already, then they'll all know somebody who works in the NHS, who works in a doctor's surgery, who works in a ministry, you know, somewhere in the DSS, and they can say, "Well, yeah, we were playing with this and we made this little app," or "I saw somebody and it would be good, you know, why don't you guys use this at your work?" And then those people can start looking at it and going, "Why don't we use this at our work?" And I'm going to start using it on the quiet and, you know, try and organise it myself. That's the only way it's going to change. That's the way we change things.
Well, it's also how the web came into being. You didn't have, you know, people. It wasn't people. You know, it wasn't John Major sitting down saying, "Oh, there's this web thing. We should get the whole of the UK government doing it." No, it was people set up crappy little things on crappy little servers that they borrowed and shoved in the corner of their office.
You know what, I thought Al Gore made the web.
He had a wet dream and he spawned the web in there.
Technically, often, internet.
You often come across his name on RFCs.
Yeah.
So that is the you know, that's the we need to do. I'm interested in how we scale that process up.
I might have a solution.
Oh, do you? Oh, that's interesting.
But that's a BBC project.
Oh. Trouble is, that sounds like it would be run by the BBC. I'm a bit worried about that. We still haven't had our argument about why the BBC is shit.
Next time. We'll get Ant Miller on as well.
I'm not hiding.
I will happily stick up for the BBC. Because I, you know, I used to be one of the biggest critics of the BBC in my early ages, and that's why I went and changed things. Anyway, should we call the night is getting old?
Dave was going to complain about mobile.
Oh yes, that sorry. Give
to toddlers, but that's so mad. I think he's just mad.
I've been called mad. No one has ever done that before.
Go on, then.
It was just that I couldn't believe I saw a big Fisher-Price toy of a brick-style mobile phone. You know, it was sort of like the joke of the 80s city bloke going bye-bye Excel, you know, in this thing the size of a brick. I was just thinking, what's the value of that? I mean, apart from the fact that it's big and the kid won't be able to eat it or swallow it.
It's like, I think you're missing the motivation of children and Fisher-Price toys.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, the most important thing is they have bright colours and you can push things so bip. I mean, obviously, that's important. But no,
the biggest thing is that it was big and chunky and you can hit things with it. That's what.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. I think we'll ignore the size bit there. Obviously, if it was a smartphone, it would be just massive and big and colourful and you could hit things with it and go, yeah. But I just thought, why have they decided that is a phone? I mean, they could have gone backwards and said, right, a dial phone, that's a phone. Well, they could have just looked like any phone in the last sort of 10, 15 years and go, why not have that as a phone? I just can't quite work out. I mean, it's not even to say, oh, well, you know, it's a world product, because the world, there isn't actually anywhere else that sort of uses brick dial. You know, the nice little Nokia, the very cheap Nokias are common phones in the world. So I just was totally confused. What is the point of that? I mean, you know, maybe it's a really old toy, but I don't think so, because the kid was really young.
I think you're overthinking it way too much. But I think it's funny.
Sorry, I was trying to find out what this was referring to. So I went to Google Images and typed in Fisher-Price mobile phone. And I'm going down, and they're all different, like, kids' phones and stuff, like pretend, you know, kids' pretend phones. And then on page two, there's the bloody iPhone.
Oh, no.
Which is a kid's phone, too, you know. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, that would make more sense. Make a little iPhone. Yeah, yeah. Well, when you think of it, that represents a phone.
So the kid, fair.
I'm just looking. They've got clamshells. They've got iPhones. They've got all sorts. Yeah,
so that means they've just on purpose. Maybe the parents have just gone, let's get the oldest phone we possibly can. Maybe they missed
maybe
the 80.
Inherited it.
It could be an inherited phone.
Or they bought the old one because the kids aren't going to grow up and play Angry Birds.
not that. I'm going to look up Fisher-Price.
It is kind of funny because they've still got those telephone ones with the little. You dial the dial and then pick up the handset and say, Wipe all 1212. But who would know what that was now?
Yeah. You see, Pat Sharp?
Sharp.
I thought he's a Pat Sharp. I was like, what?
Pat Sharp?
No, like.
He's DJ.
Yeah, no, you said, who would know? And I thought someone said Pat Sharp. And I was like, oh, maybe he would.
Pat Sharp. No, but that doesn't help us.
Anyway.
He probably had a great big phone, didn't he, Pat Sharp?
Colourful one as well.
To get through his hair.
it's probably still there, actually. Probably can't remove it.
I went all the way to page 13, and I don't see any Android phones if you search for Fisher-Price mobile phone. So just remember, Android, it's the mobile phone for grown-ups.
I have one piece of news this week. Ooh. Did you see Cisco have released a tablet?
No.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
They are calling it the tablet for serious business.
Yeah.
What's it called?
The
Sears.
It's called the... Yes, that's right. I couldn't pronounce it. It's
CIUS.
Oh yes, yes.
I couldn't actually find out what operating system it ran, so I was Android. I was kind of speculating that it might be running iOS.
But no.
Because a tablet running iOS, now that I'd buy.
Yeah. No, it runs Android.
Uh-huh. I only did that news segment so I could do that joke about iOS, really.
Yeah, we knew. I saw it coming. I didn't even laugh.
It's obviously too late at night. Either it was hysterical. It's even better than my Mick Ucknell gag.
Fine. Well, where's Jazz gone?
I'm here. I'm just listening.
Okay, you've been very quiet recently.
I do find these Americans with their mobile network. It's very strange.
Oh, just get started on
that. We've discussed it before, but I just typed in the Cisco tablet into Google, and one of the headlines from CNET News is Cisco bringing CS Android tablet to AT&T. It's like, seriously? Why are we deciding on what are essentially computers on the basis of whether they run on different different mobile providers? And why are we announcing these products on the basis of what goes on in one country?
Because
it's a big deal in the States.
Yeah, this is the reason why we have a UK or British podcast.
Mm.
Because we don't need to listen to all that shit.
But it's one of these stupid things. Like, you see all these people say, "Oh well, you know, one of the really good things about about Android is the fact that it works on all the networks." It's like, well, phones outside of the US work on all the networks because you don't use fucking retarded standards.
Oh man.
Why have I chosen a name that you can't pronounce? It's like, what? Guys? Sears?
Cheers.
Sears. You think it's Sears?
I think it's Sears.
CSKO.
It runs. Yeah.
I think that they've designed it so it's like Cialis. one of the things I thought was strange is I spent quite a long time looking at the blog and, looking at their page about it and all the rest of it, and I don't know. Did I just totally miss Android? I did text searches on the page to see if I could find Android in the page anywhere. It just was not mentioned.
Really?
The weird thing, I've got to say, though, is I've not played with the BlackBerry playbook, but...
Playbook's quite nice. A bit heavy, but it's quite nice because it looks a bit like...
I've heard that it doesn't have... was it an email app?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Well, there's a confusion tie-in with the BlackBerry. That's the only problem. It has this sort of BlackBerry bridge stuff, so you can do anything you can with your BlackBerry, but it sort of implies you have a BlackBerry.
Right.
Don't you have to have... To do email and stuff, you have to have a BlackBerry on and within Wi-Fi range or something.
This is a bridge thing. Yeah, I think that... I don't know whether that's a permanent feature, but that certainly seems to be the present.
Probably because some twat at RIM thought, oh, yeah, well, it might, like, eat into our market. No. Nah.
They've spun it. They work for a company called RIM. What do you expect?
Well, yeah. But they have spun it as, oh, well, the sort of people who are going to buy the playbook already will have a BlackBerry.
They probably thought that was a reasonable thing to say.
But it's kind of a weird thing.
Anyway, all right. Should we call this to a halt?
Yeah. So that was Tech Grumps, and it only remains for me to say fuck off and goodbye.
What?
We've got David Eastman. Do you want to say goodbye?
Good night and God bless.
Nick Ferrier.
Yes.
You're waiting for me to say Nick Ferrier said goodbye and and I'm not going to say it. So Nick Ferrier.
It's like a standoff.
Good evening, etc. Bye-bye.
We never actually found out why Nick was angry, but, you know. Anyway, sorry.
Ian Forrester?
Goodbye, and if you'd like to join us on Tech Grumps, then you can hook us up, or we can hook you up on Twitter.
If you'd like to have sex with us, same thing.
Me and Jazz are very interested in a single girls that are between the ages of now.
What the hell? Actually, cut that bit out. Jesus Christ.
Actually, no, just me, maybe. Anyway, sorry. Goodbye, people.
Yes, humanoids of the female variety, feel free to contact Ian Forrester.
Oh, man.
It would be preferable if you're not married to another humanoid.
And,
good sense of humor.
And you are a female. Because all my friends in Manchester...
Oh, and that you're heterosexual and you have genitals.
This show was doing really well before. Now it's totally
so classy, isn't it?
Oh, man. All right.
Jazz going to get to say goodbye.
Yeah, sorry.
Jazz?
Hello, ladies. If you're listening, if you want to connect with me anytime, all you have to do is...
oh, my God.
Go to
dha.li /Google+ me.
Oh, man.
That's dha.li /Google+ me.
You sound just like those late night adverts.
And me and Ian
lucky
will
this
show
podcast.
You. And me and Ian will show
you. This podcast isn't in France, isn't it? Because you wouldn't be able to do that otherwise.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And from me, goodbye, and we will soon be launching a premium rate phone line so you can call or Jazz. Your choice of hunky tech grump.
I should do that. Hello.
Should do a tech grump.
I will speak to you all night long, ladies.
Oh, man.
Right. Voice over IP in your ear.
Before I decide to get a pair of scissors and stab them into my throat, I think it's probably stop. Bye. Oh,
goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Sexy ladies.
You wouldn't get that in an American podcast, would you?
You wouldn't.